Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Luckily for him, Jim Garrity of National Review is off today. As is often the case with a few different Wednesdays in this primary season, Ian Tuttle of National Review is with us to try and pick up the pieces of the wreckage of the conservative movement following a major success the night before from frontrunner Donald Trump. Ian, it's good to have you back nonetheless. We've got two straight Tuesdays of horrific news, Donald Trump winning all five states last night. That's not a big surprise. Pennsylvania, Maryland, Delaware, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The surprise, I think, is the margins well over 50% in each state, over 60% in some of them. And that means that he got all of the delegates in Connecticut. I think he got them all in Delaware. I think he got them all in Maryland. He's got all 17, obviously, in Pennsylvania, and he's getting most of the unbound delegates as well due to the dominant performance. So he's, by some estimations, pushing 1,000 delegates now with California and at least a couple other fairly favorable states to go. It's still a possibility of a contested convention, but after nights like last night, it gets a lot harder for someone hoping for a conservative nominee.
Yeah, absolutely. And just for the record, I'm going to start charging Jim from his salary for missing these days and putting me through it. I guess those are the perks of seniority. Like I've been on different shows for the past week saying, you know, okay, you know, you look at the models, and Nate Silver has done a good, I think, realistic model of what needs to happen for Trump to, you know, get to 1237 or et cetera, et cetera. And if you look at those models, Trump needs to consistently overperform in basically every contest going forward. That's exactly what he did last night. I mean, just massively overperformed what anyone expected. I think even the most optimistic projections of Trump supporters. And after last night, it becomes a whole lot harder to think that, A, Trump might, as you pointed out, Greg, still the possibility that he won't reach 1237, but I think after last night, that possibility is diminished. And secondly, and probably more important, after last night, it becomes a whole lot more difficult to suggest that Cruz is a likely nominee on a second or third ballot. Just to run through the numbers real quickly, after last night's performance, Trump's won 40% of total votes in GOP primary states. He's won 26 of the 39 states that have voted. He'll probably reach 30 states by the end of this. I mean, he's outperforming Mitt Romney at the same point in the cycle in 2012, someone who at this point was already the presumptive nominee. In any other election cycle, we'd probably say that, you know, this is sort of signed, sealed, and delivered for Trump. The simple fact is that he's so contentious that a whole lot of people are unwilling to go that far. But last night's performance was just absolutely crushing, and I think it all hinges now on Indiana. We've been saying here for the past, you know, couple weeks, look, a lot depends on Indiana. There's a possibility that Cruz, even if he lost, it could survive. I don't think that's true after last night. Cruz has to win Indiana. He's got to walk away with 48 of the 57 delegates, something like that, and change the narrative and go into California at the end of the season with a claim that he has won, you know, a couple states and that he's picked his momentum back up, because there's really no way, in my mind, at least psychologically, that you could make a convincing case. You know, maybe it's possible, but it's very unlikely that you can make a convincing case that basically having crumbled all through the last third of the primary season, you, here being Ted Cruz, are still a credible general election candidate. That's a hard, hard case to make. So he's really got to win in Indiana next week. And the momentum from these five states is going to roll over. So if you're listening in Indiana, do your God-given duty and help us out here. But it's a tough slog going forward.
On to the crazy martini. In case you didn't already know, the first one was actually the bad martini. The crazy martini is an aspect of the last 2 weeks in the last six contests that isn't getting a lot of attention. Obviously, Trump did very, very well, and these were states that Cruz was not expected certainly to win, but even really to compete very well in. He still underperformed. He did horribly. In some of these states, he barely cleared 10%. But John Kasich was supposed to be this guy who was the one who could win in blue and purple areas. And while he did outperform Cruz in most, if not all, of the states last night, he didn't come anywhere close to Trump. He didn't get any traction anywhere. And I think Cruz actually beat him in Pennsylvania, where Kasich was born. And, of course, by the way, is right next to Ohio. So Kasich's rationale for staying in this thing, other than hoping to sneak in on a subsequent ballot at the convention, it's falling apart even further than we already claimed it was.
It's a good time to be delusional, I suppose. John Kasich didn't even file a full slate of delegates in Maryland. You know, there were districts, if you were voting in Maryland, you were provably, I'm not saying this rhetorically, you were provably mathematically throwing away your vote if you cast it for John Kasich, because he didn't file delegates there. Exactly as you point out, these were states that were supposed to be strong for Kasich. Then we're supposed to suppose that he's going to be the consensus choice on a subsequent ballot at a convention, and that the polls that he's touting saying that he's going to be a credible general election nominee against Hillary Clinton, we're supposed to believe all of that? We're supposed to think that's reasonable when he can't even perform in Pennsylvania with a demographic that's supposed to be enormously sympathetic to him? Whatever John Kasich's endgame is here, and I don't think anybody knows that, perhaps including John Kasich, this is stubborn delusion pushed to its absolute logical extreme, and I'm not sure that anybody who cares about conservative, principled government and quality leadership after this can look at John Kasich kindly or fondly after this contest wraps up, however it wraps up.
Why didn't he eat more crab cakes? I mean, that's what he's been famous for, is going to these diners and chowing down. So apparently he could have spent more time putting together a slate of delegates, or at least campaigning in a meaningful way, rather than just ceding these congressional districts and other parts of the Mid-Atlantic to Trump, essentially. But to not even go through the motions of doing this is absolutely inexcusable. On to the good martini, and it's a stretch today. We're searching hard. But in addition to the presidential contest in the five states, there were also some important primaries. The most expensive Democratic congressional primary in history played out in Maryland's 8th congressional district, because the current rep there, Chris Van Hollen, won and was running for the Senate nomination and won it. There were three major candidates for this race. One guy was David Trone, who's so liberal the ACLU named one of its centers after him. He blew $12 million of his own money on this race and lost. But he did finish ahead of Kathleen Matthews. And if you're not from the D.C. area, you might not recognize the name. She's the wife of Chris Matthews of MSNBC, and had gotten the endorsement of the Washington Post, and was kind of the Hillary candidate in this race, I have a feeling. She finished in third place. A guy named Jamie Raskin, who's a very, very liberal professor and a member of the Maryland legislature, got the nomination and will almost assuredly be the next congressman from that district. Up in Pennsylvania, the first incumbent to actually lose a primary, Chaka Fattah in Philadelphia. And it's not because he wasn't liberal enough. It's because he got indicted on 29 counts of racketeering within the last term of his years in Congress. And apparently the voters actually paid attention there. So, Ian, yes, we're stretching, but those are two good pieces of news.
We're really wearing out the elastic on this one. But no, it is. You know, one is a kind of surprising rejection out there in Maryland of a person who's well-known and well-regarded in Democratic circles, but perhaps this was a bad season for Kathleen Matthews, given the negative attention being paid to quote-unquote establishment candidates, and of course being the spouse of a premier liberal commentator is probably about as qualifying an establishment criterion as exists at this point. Secondly, out in Pennsylvania, this is fantastic news. Of course, it will be a Democratic congressman, but I give all a praise and honor to my former National Review colleague, Jillian Melcher, who did a number of in-depth pieces on Chaka Fattah in Philadelphia, and just an enormously corrupt, unconscionably corrupt congressman from the City of Brotherly Love. It's a small but important sliver of light that Philadelphia's voters were willing to knock him out of office. I should add, though, I don't think they did so by much. I don't think the margin was actually that significant. But one fewer corrupt Democrat in Congress is a good thing.
It certainly is. Too bad Pennsylvanians did not renominate Joe Sestak. I think that would have been an easier route for Pat Toomey to re-election, but Katie McGinty's got her own problems, so I think Toomey still has the upper hand. So an interesting night, most of it really depressing. Ian, I assume we'll have you back soon.
And yeah, I'm sure I'll be back next Wednesday.
If Trump wins Indiana, it's only a given that you'll be here a week from now. So talk to you then, or if things go a little bit better for conservatives a little bit further down the road.
Sounds good. Thanks, Greg.
Ian Tuttle of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Jim will be back on Thursday. Join us then for the next 3 Martini Lunch.